Welcome to the month 11 investable ETR briefing, and we're presenting the period today from the 1st of the 11th to the 30th of the 11th. So as the briefing document explains, exchange traded receivables are leases, monetary obligations or bills under contract for assets, goods and services that are supplied to investment quality companies are credit-insured invoices from investment-grade insurers. What that all really means is that an ETR is evidence of a debt owing from one company to another. Typically, these tend to be large companies or banks that are household names, and they owe their smaller micro to medium-sized suppliers. We call these micro to medium-sized supplier businesses originators because they originate the debt obligation transactions that create the ETR that are traded on the exchange. So the ETR is evidence of the large company's liability to pay the smaller supplier, and credit exchange buys these ETR at a nominal discount to their face value. In doing so, when the ETR are settled or paid in full, the difference between the face value that is settled and the discounted price that it was purchased at creates a margin. And that's the margin that creates the yield or return for investors. So credit exchange also provides other credit facilities for different types of transactions, such as trade finance, asset finance, and so on. Essentially, they all work on the same principles that the traded ETR is a business transaction. The exchange provides the liquidity and is paid a commission for doing so, much in the same way banks charges interest. So as the briefing states, at the end of November, Credit Exchange held active RSA of 17.84 million. RSA, as you may know, stands for Revolving Sale Agreement. And a revolving sale agreement is a document or contract between the micro, medium-sized business or the originator and credit exchange. So the revolving sale agreement, or RSA, is a commitment by the originator to sell a certain amount of, a certain value, I should say, of ETR to the exchange in any given period. Typically, this is for 1 year. For example, let's say an originator needs a revolving credit facility of $250,000 to run their business. They come to credit exchange, much like they would to a bank, and they apply for that credit facility. If we agree to offer them the $250,000 on a revolving basis, every 60 days, let's say, they must agree to sell us $250,000 worth of ETR every 60 days, and the revolving sale agreement, or RSA, will be for therefore 1.5 million over a 12-month period. So this commitment to sell the 1.5 million of ETR annually to the exchange is documented in the RSA, and as stated, at the end of November, we held 17.84 million of these contracts. For the last six consecutive monthly briefings, I've explained there's a significant decline in the total value of the RSA contracts owned by the exchange, but this is a combination of mid-year trading that continues to compound all the way through to quarter four. Again, it's more to do with a feature of the 2020 trading patterns, which I'll go into a little bit later. So it's not a surprise to us here. In fact, it's the scenario that we're experiencing now is what we had predicted back in 2018, early 2019. So the decline was also evidenced in our published figures for 2019, but it's clear that our strategy that was initiated during last year and the corrective actions that we took has produced the desired positive results that are now evident in our accounts for 2020. Our move further into trade finance has been a significant contributor, and indeed there are also strong indications coming from the shipping sector. So I think we've interpreted the market correctly and to our advantage. So the briefing in January, when we expect the auditors to finish, they won't quite be finished by the end of January, but we'll certainly have the draft accounts for then, and they should show a strong positive result from our actions and our trading during this year. As this briefing is about November's trades, the continued positive increase in trading was slightly behind the target set in January. As you may recall, we set a target to increase annual trade volume by our value, I should say, by 75% in 2020. And we predicted last month we'd end up around the 150 mark. I'd say it'll probably be close to 155. We have one particular transaction going through as we speak. If they get it done before the 31st, which is only six trading days from today, yeah, we might breach 160, but not the 175. Marginally off, and nothing to be too sad about, if the truth be known. Anyway, throughout the year, and as stated in prior briefings on the matter, the overall effect that COVID has had on the exchange has been positive. December being a month for reflection, despite the devastation of the world's economy during 2020, what the coronavirus has actually done to the exchange is accelerate the need for us to change. What may have taken two or more years to develop in normal circumstances was accelerated and condensed into the last 10 short months. So at yesterday's board meeting, significant time was spent explaining the need for the organization's restructure to a leaner, cleaner, flatter and lower cost-based organization, where the focus is going to be on responsibility and accountability for each member of the team, because we think we're going to enter a tough year's trading next year, along with everyone else, I'm sure. The exchange is now truly looking at the coronavirus in its rear view mirror, I guess. And for the good of all, we believe that this time next year, the worst will have passed and we can all look forward to returning to normal, albeit significantly changed business landscape for 2021. And indeed the years ahead. So it's not all doom and gloom though. COVID has seen lots of people adapt. This conference call we're having now is a good example. Suddenly the concept of video conferencing has become a standard. Telephone conference calls were quickly replaced with Teams and Zoom and the like. For us, this has improved our efficiency and made it possible for us to expand our reach internationally, where in 2019, last year, years before, dealing with countries like France, Turkey, or Brazil would have probably required us to travel there. Now we can, inverted commas, meet someone in Sao Paulo at 3 o'clock and an hour later be speaking to someone else in Paris. So the speed of communication, combined with people no longer needing to meet you in person, means that growing our international trade finance has developed much faster this year. So our market focus continues to benefit from that speed and the access to international trade, so that where the decline occurs in one sector in our indigenous market and related sectors, foreign trade compensates with positive results elsewhere. As stated last month, overall, this has brought us to our strongest year to date, with both income and profits substantially higher than any prior year in the history of the company. And as I said, this will be borne out in our consolidated group accounts that will be available in February. I'm mentioning the consolidated group accounts because in January 2021, the new Trade Credit Limited subsidiary will begin trading. For those of you unaware of the group structure, it's a simple triangle. We've got Credit Holdings at the top, Credit Exchange Limited on the left, and then Trade Credit Limited on the right. So they're both wholly owned subsidiaries of Credit Holdings. And the purpose of the structure is to separate out Trade Credit into its own limited liability company. This will then provide a clear report on all Indigenous and non-Indigenous industry trades within the Irish and UK territories, and separate out the international based trading through Trade Credit Limited. Anyway, returning to the briefing, then goes on to say that there was 24.8 million fully allocated. And this is a repeat of last month's allocation, albeit slightly lower, about 10% lower. What this fully allocated figure means is that on the 30th of November, the exchange held ETR valued at 24.8 million. This means that there was 24.8 million of investors' funds in the market on the last day of November. And if you add that to the RSA of 17.84, that represents future orders we have that we've not yet filled, it totals just over 44 million. This is fairly typical position for the exchange at this time of year. Moving on to the next figure, it states that investors redeemed roughly 360,000 of their funds in November. It seems the number 17 is a recurring number this month too. For this month in September, there's been 17 settlements paid out to investors. Whilst the 360,000 left the exchange, it's also worth pointing out that a further 2.3 million was invested. So the value of withdrawals is below that of average. Any given month would typically be probably closer to 500,000 or 600,000. But for whatever reason, could be tax related, tax season related. Anyway, as is typical, these investors' funds were a mixture of the inbound investors' funds I'm talking about were a mixture of companies using ETR as a safe haven for their cash, and an even split of pension funds in the form of ARF, PRBs, PRSAs, and then private investors' savings. So the investor inflows continue to outgrow withdrawals and are consistent with prior year's trends. As repeated multiple times over multiple briefings this year, the coronavirus that has caused the economic crisis has been and is good for investable investors with continued liquidity and stability in our market. The document then brings the focus to the ETR average duration figure of 102 days. This number, as you may know, is called the credit index. This is the ETR average duration, or number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled. Even though 102 days would be considered high, in checking this against 2019, you would see that in November of last year, it was at 115, which struck me as a bit odd. I'm trying to think what was going on towards the end of last year that we didn't pick up on at the time. Was there some indication of a weakness in the market? Did this number speak to the pending gloom that was to arrive in our doors in March? Andrew and I look into this in a bit more detail over Christmas and see what, if any, significant last year's number held. So more on that in January, if there's anything in it. Anyway, I kind of off the subject a little bit there. Returning back to the credit index, as I said, this is the ETR average duration, or number of days it takes for an ETR to get settled. So it's the cash to cash cycle from the day the ETR is issued and purchased in cash, and the number of days it takes for the debt to be extinguished or settled and the cash returned. So the index did hit an all-time high of 134 days back in June, which would have been a serious concern to any originator. But this 102-day number means payments in November of this year were more efficient, funnily enough, than they were last year. So talking about this in a little bit more detail, this number means that on average it took 102 2 days for an ETR to settle. So originators have the same revolving credit facility requirements this year as they did last year. However, current easing of lockdown didn't provide much relief. Payments did not speed up. And as we predicted, it did pass the 100-day mark. For the better part of this year, I've talked about slumps in consumer spending being offset by the increase in other market improvements such as food, utilities, and expenditure in the medical sector. Last month, I pointed to our own internal research that of all the exchanges active originators, where we saw that more than 65% of these companies had, on average, experienced a decrease in trade of 45%. So that's half their business. So this reduction is hard evidence of the concern I voiced back in September. And back then I spoke of various reports predicting 11 to 12% decline in our economy. I also suggested the UK's drop in GDP, the decline in Ireland as a result of Brexit, and the 17% ESRI figure could all round out at 20%, but even that was too conservative. So my prediction of a more severe economic turmoil in the Irish market was then contradicted by the European Commission's autumn report, economic forecast for Ireland, where it sees the economy is projected to contract by only 2.25% in 2020. Before it would return back to growth next year by 3%. The report even goes on further to talk about predicted growth of 2.5% in 2022. That's just simply not the case, not for two-thirds of our originators. To me, this is looking at the total economy that includes some of the world's largest IT and pharmaceutical companies. So it's not really making specific reference to the actual effect on the micro to medium market sector we serve. Earlier in November, I read an article in the Irish Times where they got closer to my number of 40%, and they said the key to the difference in forecasts is the performance of the multinational sector, with strong production and exports by the pharmaceutical and IT companies key to the improved outlook. However, the impact on the investment in Ireland is the worst in the UK in the EU, as it is set to shrink by 41.3% in 2020 before returning to growth next year. So, respect to the Irish Times, their figures and ours seem to be pretty much aligned. Their same article does go on to say that growth will return in 2021, but it will be 2 years until the European economy comes close to regain its pre-pandemic levels. So pretty sobering stuff. Anyway, regarding the UK, it's also forecast to be severely hit, as we know, with a shrinkage of more than 10% this year. But they're looking at claiming a recovery next year of 3% and possible 2% the year after, which is going to be slower than some of the other member states. In Europe, Gentilini warned that there were exceptionally large downside risks to their forecast for Ireland, particularly if there are further resurgences of the virus in the future. So for those of you who are unaware of Mr. Paolo Gentiloni Silveri, he is the Italian politician serving as European Commissioner for the Economy. So his publishing of the economic forecast for the EU and talks of Ireland, the outlook assumes that there will be a no deal situation between the EU and the British by the end of the year, and that the EU countries will trade on WTO terms from the first of next month. If a deal is reached with the UK, this could help lift the outlook, according to the Commission. He also references the stimulus from the EU's $750 billion recovery package that is expected to kick in next year, and that this will support additional growth. However, I think he's been slightly over-optimistic when you compare to not one, but three separate stimulus packages in the US since March, Combined, these three packages were seven or more times greater than the EU amount. The Americans put $5 trillion to work. So I think their 750 doesn't look the right fit size or fit to me. Anyway, the Economic and Social Research Institute, or the ESRI, is anticipating at least one and possibly two further lockdowns next year. If COVID vaccines are rolled out later than thought, than they think, they're predicting that we'll have two lockdowns. And this obviously is going to affect their forecast for next year also. Research professor Kieran McQuinn in that document stated that despite the ending of the current lockdown, the outlook for the economy was, quote unquote, a bit of a mixed bag, whatever that means, because any spike in the COVID-19 cases through Christmas would likely lead to at least one lockdown, if not more next year. And just before we started this call, was it you, Stephen, was saying that, or maybe it was Bartle, were saying that they're going to have another, they're going to lock us all up again on the 28th, so before the new year. Reading another thing from ING, the ING think tank states clearly that a very dominant factor for the Irish recovery in 2021 will be Brexit. So even if a deal is reached between the EU and the UK, any initial disruption will still dampen the recovery path of the economy moving out of the second lockdown. The worst case scenario would involve tariffs introduced between the UK and the EU, which is kind of an obvious statement, which would have a significant negative impact on the Irish economy as it involves its closest trading partner, the UK, and would introduce disproportionately high product prices, a lot of which are staples of the Irish economy. We're in for a bit of a tumultuous year, and Brexit certainly will not necessarily be helpful, as it's difficult to see how any outcome would not harm economic recovery. This 11th hour stuff that they're going on at the moment. A few hours ago, I was just watching Michel Barnier stated in his intensive discussions with EU coastal members that their margins for manoeuvre as the overall fisheries negotiations with the UK enter a critical phase. So the EU has suggested that it could forgo between 15 to 18% of the value of the 650 million euros worth of fish caught by the European fleets in the UK waters each year. The British government are talking about splitting out certain fish stocks. He went on to say it's the moment of truth. We have very little time remaining, just a few hours to work through these negotiations in a useful fashion if we want this agreement to enter into force on the 1st of January. There is a chance of getting an agreement, but the path to such an agreement is very narrow, he said. Then he says, we find ourselves in a very serious and somber situation. So I don't know, is that a deal in the making speech or is a deal in the breaking speech? Who's to say? We'll certainly know before we meet next month. On the subjects of exits or retiring, this year Bartle Landy retired. Many of you know Bartle, and thank you for coming on the call today, Bartle. I asked you to attend so that I can thank you for your support over the past 7 years. For the record, after 2 years of preparation and groundwork prior to opening Credit Exchange for Trading, it was Bartle that was the first to bring us an investor. I suppose looking back, it was a little bit nerve-wracking to receive the first funds from Bartle when you actually realize what you're committing to. Anyhow, this was the first of over 100 million euros of investment that we've received since then. So thank you very much, Bartle. It's sincerely appreciated. And we hope you finally have some time now to take it easy and enjoy your retirement. We'll continue, of course, to invite you to our annual lunch, But in the current environment, I think we decided we had to cancel this year's launch. So hopefully it'll be on again next year. And again, I look forward to seeing you and everyone else on this call then. Anyway, returning back to the ETR briefing, we had a pretty respectable 14.5 million in November, which is a 10% improvement on October's figures of around 13 million. So September to November, the figures have been a good pull to the positive. As we look to the closing days of December, the outlook for the exchange in 2021 is very positive. We're predicting a 30% increase in trade next year. So we'll be back. We'll be back in the market in Q1, taking Noel Ford's advice and offering spot market incentives to you, all to fulfill specific funding requirements as they arise. Below last month's trading figure of 14.48 million, you will see that in the same period, treasury performance was 8.16 million. This means that we spent roughly 14.5 million and collected almost just over 8 million. This counteracts the September overbalance of inflow of cash when trade purchases were below that of trade settlements. As the audience already knows, the trade desk and treasury monitor this trade balance of funds in versus funds out to ensure it remains stable and within the control parameters set down by the credit risk policy, the risk policy that covers the overall risk exposure and the general exchange trading policies. So the ebb and flow of trade and cash during November is lower than usual on the collection side, but this can in part be attributed to the credit index at 102 days. So this would have had a slight impact on Treasury's performance. Moving to the center of the document, this is where we list the 10 largest investable ETR holdings and the top rated holdings. So these two lists show what companies or organizations owed the exchange the largest amount of money, largest amounts of money, I should say, as at the 30th of November. And as you can see, the HSE and Huawei continue to hold their slots for the ninth consecutive month. As with last month, we can see repeated appearances of Atradius, CBRE, Vodafone, and so on. Cork County Council was welcomed back in July and is now for a fifth month in a row. And Musgraves have been and gone and are now back again. So nice, stable list on the left. On the right-hand side are the highest rated debtors. And this basically shows a random selection of organization, regardless of the amount of their liability. As with last month, none of these were investment grade or have an investment grade rating on the 30th of November. So it's just a selection of the most credit worthy. As has been the case since the better part of two thirds of this year now, the pie chart below these two sets of lists continues to demonstrate a significant change in the typically well-diversified spread of ETR across the market. COVID continues to show that the HSE in Ireland and the NHS in England, along with others in the health and community sectors, remain off their April high of 25%, but it's up 1% percentage point on last month at the 16% mark. Since March, April, this pie chart has a repeated heavy exposure to the wholesale retail market. And as per prior statements throughout this year's briefings, that's more to do with wholesale than retail. So Dunstores, Musgraves and others may make regular appearance on our top 10 largest investable ETR holdings. But in general, high street retail continues to experience the severe downturn that started in February or March. We have limited, if not no, exposure to that sector. Ours is more looking at the wholesale trade, and this continues to perform well with fast, fluid transactions that are recurring and stable. The PICE chart still continues to reference the EU NACE categorization system, and whilst we continue to adopt our own credit classification system, the credit classification system has been extended in recent weeks as we start to break out transport, freight and shipping too. So this is all part of the new credit machine software that will be used to bring the exchange into the next 5-10 years of trading. Unfortunately, today we're informed of a delay of perhaps 1 or 2 months. No surprise there when it comes to IT. It's more of an irritant than anything else, but we're expecting to have our old singing, old dancing system, certainly in the first half of next year. Returning to the actual performance of the exchange in November of this year versus November of last year, you can see that the trading values were up more than 80%. So this repeats the growth of 70% in both September and October, and again continues a strong pullback to the positive from quarter two. However, despite this, unfortunately, reaching this year's target income and budget for a growth of 75% is not going to happen. We'll be ending the year somewhere between 150 and 160 million. So this is a 60% improvement on 2019. And I think it reflects pretty well on the efforts of all the people here in Credit Exchange that work like all of us in very challenging conditions throughout the year. I did speak of the index of 102, but beside that, we talk about there were 6,200 creditors or debtors and creditors at month end in November. As per prior investor briefings, relative to the number of trading companies in Ireland, this is a significant and statistically strong reference point when considering the local market. So this credit index is a strong indicator of how credit control and payment cycles are performing in Ireland at any moment in time. So 75 days has been the best base rate mark for a cash-to-cash cycle as an indicator for both the Irish and the UK market, I should say. And it remained pretty stable throughout 2017 and 18. But at 102 days, the market's well off its base by, call it 25%. But curiously enough, it's still lower than it was this time last year. Anyway, to finish on the performance in November, the largest single trade was just under 0.27 million. As explained in the investment brochure and also at other briefings, the average value of an ETR is circa 2,000 euro. But we have traded ETR where the value has been less than a euro. And as you can see here, last month, the largest one was 270,000. Moving then to the trend section of the briefing, we can see that the investor's yield or buy price during November averaged circa 1.850%. It's a slight increase on last month. But as explained earlier, in the current market conditions, with two-thirds of the market in serious trading decline, and then combine this with our high standards and negotiations surrounding the onboarding of new originators. The issues with new origination remain unchanged again in month 11 and is consistent with prior months. So as we discussed after last month's briefing, when you compare this to the negative 65 basis points in the bank, I think investors are getting a yield that is 2.75% better than the bank deposit. Also, at last month's briefing, we discussed introducing some kind of temporary boost for investors, but it was rejected and simply because you guys felt it wasn't necessary. So we'll keep a watchful eye on that next year, as we'll be seeking to raise the overall fund size. As you all know, this rate of 1.85 changes daily, and you can check it on the investable.com website. Just to discuss trend a little bit more detail, the graph on the right shows the movement during the month. We started at 1.817, and as the days passed, it ambled along at a gradual incline and ended at 1.831. So to finish this briefing, you'll see a repeat of the active RSA, our evolving sale agreement of 17.84 million. So that's it for this month. Thank you all for attending.